This is the state of things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. The Trump administration has toughened requirements for a SNAP program. The new rules are expected to cut food stamps for nearly 700,000 people. Previously, work-eligible adults without children had to log at least 20 hours of work per week to qualify for benefits. Without the 20 hours, the recipient would only receive 3 months of SNAP benefits every 3 years. But many cities were able to waive that 3-month time limit because of high unemployment rates or insufficient jobs. The new rules restrict those waivers. Those tighter rules, in fact, have been in effect in North Carolina since 2016. Lindsay Haynes-Maslow is a professor and extension specialist in the Department of Agriculture and Human Sciences at NC State University, also the principal investigator of an NC State SNAP education program, Steps to Health. And she joins us now. Welcome back, Lindsay.
Thank you so much for having me.
Tell us about these new rules that we're looking at from the Trump administration and how they would apply generally.
Yeah, so I want to take a step back and just remind people. So the SNAP program is administered under the Farm Bill. And in December 2018, we passed the Farm Bill with very little changes to the SNAP program. And within months, what you saw was the USDA started introducing rules. So this is the first of 3 rules that have actually been introduced. And now this one has been passed. It is interesting because they did allow for a public comment period. So over 60 days, 140,000 public comments were submitted in response to this rule. And the USDA even admits that the majority opposed the rule. They didn't like the rule. They said it would hurt low-income families. It would hurt the economy. But it's a little bit untraditional for an agency to ignore the majority of the public's opinion.
And let me just stop you because I know you said that this rule passed. To be clear, it did not pass a legislative process. This is an executive. This is executive authority. So it's
So this is through the rulemaking process. So this is there's 3 ways to pass a law, and this is one of them.
Right.
And it's probably the most efficient right now, and you'll probably see a lot go through under this administration through the rulemaking process. But as of right now, what's going to happen is April 1st, 2020, that 3-month time limit for individuals that are ages 18 to 49, which we call the able-bodied adults without children, in order to even ask for a waiver, cities or towns, so it used to be that you had to have a 20% unemployment rate. That was 20% higher than the national rate. Now there's 2 criteria. So you have to have a 6% unemployment rate for your town or county, and you have to have an unemployment rate that is above 20% of the national average. So that is going to impact about 688,000 low-income Americans across the country. And in North Carolina, it's a little bit of a different story.
Well, in a way, from the Trump administration's point of view, it makes sense. Look, unless you have high unemployment, you ought to be working. And if you're not working, then we're not going to give you the benefit. I mean, does that make sense?
Yeah, so definitely. I mean, one of the main criteria and the arguments used for this is that we need to move people off welfare to work programs, and they need to be working. I do want to say that I think I'm concerned that there are populations. So one, the able-bodied adults without children, it's a very understudied population. And even the Secretary of Agriculture mentioned in one of the hearings that we really don't know a lot about this population. You're talking about people that maybe have low education, so they're trying to find work. They may not have employment opportunities. They may be shift workers. They might be veterans returning and trying to find jobs, just not qualified. They might be foster youth coming out of the system trying to find a job. So it's really not a lot of research in this area to understand how do we find the work for people. So in rural areas, one, you have a lack of job opportunities. And in urban areas, we have such a low unemployment rate. So if you do have a lower education level, your qualifications for getting and keeping a job are probably not going to be as sustainable for someone with a college-educated degree.
So there might be like in the Triangle or in the Charlotte area, a low unemployment rate, but a lot of those jobs are high-skilled jobs and require high education. Mm-hmm. That's why there's a low unemployment rate. So you look at the low-skill areas. They may be left out. What do we know? I guess we know from the numbers. If we're saying that 700,000 people or so could be affected, that tells you how many how many people or how many how widespread the waivers had been used up until now.
Yeah,
they were. Any other way to measure
that? They were definitely used by a lot of states. I will say there were some states that opted out. So in North Carolina in 2015, Governor McCrory and the North Carolina legislature actually passed a law, and it was called to protect North Carolina workers, and it basically banned our state from asking for waivers. At that time, we made that ban official. 77 counties in North Carolina were eligible for that waiver. So what is interesting, though, is this past spring, the North Carolina House of Representatives actually introduced a bill trying to repeal that ban. It didn't go very far. So I would encourage listeners to see what happens this next year to see if they reintroduce the bill. Because if they are able to repeal that ban, I've done the math. And under the new Trump administration rule, 11 counties in North Carolina, predominantly northeastern North Carolina, would actually be eligible to qualify for those waivers, those time limit waivers.
So we've had some way, at least some time, mm-hmm. to look at the effects of this. Have we done any research? Do we know what kind of impact this has had?
Yeah, so the North Carolina Justice Center, when the rule was being, or the law was being proposed, actually estimated that 100,000 North Carolinians would be kicked off the program. So, and I do want to tie that back to economics, because I think it's important that we remember that for every $1 invested in this program, the SNAP program, you get $1.79 that goes back into the economy. That is through the grocery store, that is directly to farmers who accept SNAP, it's farmers markets, it's any type of food retail outlet where we're actually making money for the economy. So while this new rule overall nationally will save $5.5 billion, it's at the expense of kicking off 700,000. And one other thing is I did find that in 2014, Maine actually did the same thing. They banned their state from asking for waivers. And within months, 80% of able-bodied working adults actually dropped off the SNAP program. Hmm.
And we know from the economic side, you talked about that multiplier effect, $1.79 into the local economy for every dollar spent, which I think resulted, if I have this right, in a $25 million loss for the state of North Carolina.
Yeah, approximately you're looking at year after year after year. It has really taken an economic hit, and especially for those that work in this area that are working in food retail and or other jobs that would relate to that.
What about the human impact? What do we know what kind of impact it's had on people?
So I will say SNAP is probably one of the most effective federal food assistance programs in the country. It's the largest one. It reduces food insecurity by 30%. It lifts millions of people out of poverty each year just because of that added income. And the one thing that is important to remember is that food insecurity, so if you are hungry, you deal with diet-related chronic diseases. You're not able to manage those chronic diseases. And what I often explain to students and other researchers is that if you have an uncontrolled diet-related chronic condition, it's a lot more expensive to walk into the ER and have to deal with it then than it would be to actually have that food at the time you need it and actually consume it.
That's going on. So food insecurity has other costs as well. So there's that multiplier effect, the cost of not providing this. And the fact is that food stamps, and this is always, it used to be called food stamps, we now call it SNAP, really doesn't meet the entire need when we talk about food insecurity and people's needs.
Yeah, I will say that I've worked with economists, and we've seen that the SNAP program, and it is supplemental, it's not supposed to cover the entire food budget, but for a family of four, it really only covers about 40 to 60% of what a monthly food cost would be. So it is very supplemental. And I will say that most people that are on the program spend all their benefits by the end of the month, and they're very savvy about making sure that they are trying to watch week by week how much money they have left over.
Now, I know you've been talking about and looking at food insecurity across the state, especially in rural areas, and you talk to a number of families. What are you finding out? What are you hearing?
Yeah, so I want to say we were funded by Share Our Strength in partnership with Feeding America to examine rural food insecurity, and we focused on rural North Carolina up in the northeastern part of the state. And I will say, as an icebreaker for when we interviewed food insecure families, I would sit and I would ask, pretend I'm your best friend and I'm thinking about moving here. What are you going to tell me about the community? What do I need to know? And most people would start off positive. They would say, it's really nice, it's quiet, it's friendly. And then there would immediately be a stop and a pause. And they would look at me and ask, well, wait, do you need a job? Are you looking for a job? Do you need a good paying job? And I said, sure, let's pretend I need a good job. And then they said, hold off. You don't want to move here. We just don't have the job opportunities. Or you can work at a fast food restaurant, or you can work at a hotel chain. And someone literally just said, you're going to struggle. So it's not that these families, and I'll say 85% of the people we interviewed were on SNAP. It's not that they don't want to work. They literally are looking for opportunities, and those opportunities are difficult to find. Many of them talked about commuting even to the Triangle area just to get that higher wage, an hourly wage, and then driving back. But it is a very interesting, I will say, idea that people on this program don't want to work, because it's pretty embarrassing to have to go in, especially for a rural community, and get recertified to stay on the program. In a rural town, a lot of people know you. Walking in those doors, you don't want to be known as the person on this program.
Lindsay Haynes-Maslow is a professor and extension specialist in the Department of Agriculture and Human Sciences at NC State. Lindsay, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
You can find links to this discussion at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, the Atlantic Coast Pipeline continues to cause unrest in rural counties in this state and around the region. We will learn more on the state of things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Please stay with us.